What's up, you beautiful bastards? Hope you're having a fantastic Thursday. Welcome back to the Philip DeFranco Show. And a quick note before we get started. Funny enough, on yesterday's video where we talked about the copyright system on YouTube being abused and being anti-creator and ridiculous, we got a copyright claim. First, it appeared that we got hit by Complex. We disputed. They ended up finally releasing it today. Then about 40 minutes later, I got another email about another copyright claim on that same video. But this time, it was from SBS Broadcasting NL. We are now in the dispute process with them as well. I will say, to give these companies a little bit, I think that a large part of this problem is due to the automated nature of the content ID system. But if you're going to use an automated system of this nature, you need to have a group of people dedicated to make sure that it's actually being implemented properly. Because for every me that is hit, someone that is hyper aware of what is happening, I have a base and community that I can mobilize. I really wonder how many other creators are just not aware that the money is being siphoned to this other company. And or two, given the anti-creator predatory nature of a copyright claim, how many creators don't even bother with the dispute? They lose all that money because they feel like they're gonna lose in the end anyway. As far as the rest of the show, let's just jump into it. And the first thing I wanna talk about today is a story that really stood out to me, and it starts with the NBA, but it's so much bigger. And the reason we're talking about this today is actually thanks to NBA Commissioner Adam Silver. Last weekend, Adam was speaking at the Sloan Sports Analytics Conference, and he starts off by saying this.
I think there's a few issues going on. One is a larger societal issue. And I know you have a lot of young people who work for you at the Ringer. Obviously, our players are young. We have young people in our office. I mean, I think we live a bit in the age of anxiety.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's I've read studies on this. I think part of it is a direct product of social media.
Right, and this is a topic that we've hit on before, people being anxious, how social media affects us in our daily lives. And then he specifically goes on to talk about players in the league.
I think those players we're talking about, when I meet with them, what strikes me is that they are truly unhappy.
And there's more that Adam Silver says here, but before jumping there, I do want to hit on that not everyone is on board with what Adam is saying. The fountain of wisdom that is Charles Barkley said on ESPN's Get Up, quote, "That's probably the stupidest thing I've ever heard Adam say. Listen, these guys are making 20, 30, 40 million dollars a year. They work 6 to 7 months a year. Stay at the best hotels in the world. They ain't got no problems. That's total bogus." And my initial reaction to Barkley there is if he just like read the headline or he actually watched the full Adam Silver quote, because Silver even addresses this.
I think to the outside world, they see the fame, the money, all the trappings that go with it. They're the best in the world at what they do. You know, they say, how is it possible? Like, they could even be complaining. And I hear this on television all the time. A lot of these young men are genuinely unhappy.
He goes on to say that some are amazingly isolated. And something that I really do want to get out there. Money makes life easier, but it does not automatically fix what is going on in your brain. One, depression doesn't care how much you got in your bank account. That bank account definitely will help alleviate problems in your life, but it does not instantly make everything okay. I really want to get across that there is nothing healthy about the social media experience that we have right now. And I mean that for both everyday people who all of a sudden will have their thoughts or their pictures or whatever thrust in front of people that normally would not have seen them, as well as people in high profile positions. It is my personal belief that people are not properly equipped to deal with hundreds of thousands of people commenting on you, what you're doing, what you think. And I'll use myself as an example. On any given day, aside from like, you know, the extreme outlier situations where someone's issuing like a death threat, I have a ton of people that are sending me love, saying nice things to me. They appreciate me. That's so great. And then I have people that fucking despise me. To the point of just spamming me, how much they hate me and how I'm a horrible person, to just some really weird twisted bullshit. It is my personal belief that human beings aren't equipped to deal with that. And it's easier said than done to say, well, just don't go on social media. The online world for a lot of us has become inseparable to our everyday real world experience. Also, I will say, thanks to the hyper competitive nature of sports in general, people like NBA players are on the receiving end of just a lot of crazy hate. And often what happens is when you receive like these waves of hate, instead of just kind of turning it off and just going like, ah, that doesn't matter, a lot of the time it pushes people to dive even further into the online world looking for validation from the people that like them. But as you've seen pretty much anyone in the spotlight say, you can see 20 nice things about you. A lot of people are just going to focus on the really hateful one thing that they get. But I will also acknowledge, while I do disagree with Charles Barkley, I think part of this is somewhat generational. My father, myself, and a Gen Zer all had different experiences as far as us figuring out who we are, where we get self-worth. Right, my father didn't have social media growing up, so his value system, everything about him, it was based off of his family, his friend group, his community. Whereas I am technically a millennial, right? I refer to it as like the MySpace generation. If you had MySpace in high school and around then, I consider you MySpace generation. And so, of course, the introduction of that shaped how I view the world. I value myself. I value others. But especially these younger kids, social media has been a part of their lives since forever. I mean, all of this even connects to, we recently talked about research on the show that showed that Gen Zers, I mean, they talk about anxiety and depression being a massive issue for them. And really why this story stood out to me is, like Adam Silver said, I don't think that this is an NBA issue. I think it's a societal issue. It's a generational issue. And I think we really need to combat this idea that because someone has good stuff or is successful somewhere else, that they can't be immensely depressed and anxious. At the end of the day, no matter what's in your bank account, no matter whatever classifier gets attached to you, we're all human beings. And human beings are a broken mess in a variety of ways, and it is one of the things that actually unifies us all. And I feel like bad take machines like Charles Barkley, they hurt the potential progress that can be made around conversations like this. And that's a note that I think ESPN host Jay Williams hit on fantastically. While saying he fervently disagrees with Charles Barkley, he added, people all have internal struggles. What happens with that when he, Charles Barkley, says things like that? That automatically challenges people opening up to talk about some of the things that is driving them to whatever those issues are in their life. That forces people to shut down and saying, you don't walk in their shoes. You may have made money. You may have been a superstar, but you don't walk in the shoes of those individuals. You weren't raised in the age of social media. You don't know how that can affect you when you're raised with that. So show empathy towards that and let's help these people that are openly saying, I have issues, instead of attacking them. And finally, closing by saying, I get pissed off about that because I went through something drastic in my life and I deal with it all the time. And those kind of people that say things like that, they have no idea what they're talking about. They're just talking. But yeah, that's where I'm going to end this one. And of course, pass the question off to you. That's the story, my personal take on it, and I'd love to hear from you whether you agree or disagree. Then, in the internet-y story that just will not end, we once again have PewDiePie and T-Series. PewDiePie, of course, has the most subscribers for any YouTube channel. T-Series has been on his tail for a long time now. And it appears that T-Series is coming in for the kill shot. Right now, as of recording this video, Felix has a 23,000 subscriber advantage. And while a large chunk of this story has been propelled by Felix himself, the creators around him, the community, trying to support him, right? An individual creator versus a massive corporation. Yesterday, we saw the chairman and marketing director for T-Series putting out a plea to viewers to subscribe. And that video including the caption, we're on the brink of becoming the world's biggest YouTube channel. We can make history. We can make India win. Subscribe to T-Series. So they were trying to use nationalism as a way to surge ahead. A move that Felix reacted to with, they are getting desperate. Once again, even when T-Series does eventually pass, Felix will be the most subscribed YouTuber. Right, the fact that the community has held off T-Series for so long, this massive corporation in one of the largest emerging YouTube markets. I mean, I am still legitimately shocked that they have not passed. But also too, in this situation, I have to congratulate Flare TV. Out of everyone that has personally gained from this situation, I imagine that Flare TV has gained the most. And if you're like, why does that name sound familiar? I don't know where to place it. They're the main channel here on YouTube that people know about to go to their live stream to see what the sub count difference is. Like just from a business hustle standpoint, I respect this so much. 7 months ago, when they were putting out videos, they would get things like 11,000 views. As of September 1st, you know, as this was starting to become a thing, they started a live stream with this sub count. And since then, they have garnered so many views and so many subscribers. I mean, just look at that rise. I mean, even just in the past 30 days, they've gained more than 440,000 subscribers. Their first live stream around this received 116 million views. And that's not even including the new live stream that they started up on February 6th. And so really, I include this to congratulate the real winners of PewDiePie versus T-Series. And then let's talk about this news where an NBC affiliate in San Diego is reporting that the US government is keeping track of journalists, lawyers, and other immigration rights organizers who are crossing the US-Mexico border. The station says that they received a document from an anonymous source in the Department of Homeland Security, and this document contains a list of 58 people. 10 are journalists, and of those 10, 7 are US citizens, another is a lawyer from the United States, and the rest are from both the United States and other countries and are listed as organizers, instigators, or just unknown. The journalists on that list were reportedly covering the migrant caravan that made its way to the San Ysidro port of entry in San Diego from Central America and contained close to 5,000 people. And the others on the list were allegedly working with events related to the caravan as well. The document in question is dated on January 9th, 2019 and is titled San Diego Sector Foreign Operations Branch Migrant Caravan FY 2019 Suspected Organizers, Coordinators, Instigators, and Media. And on the documents, there is also a logo with the US and Mexico flags along with the acronym ILU. And many believe this suggests that it is part of the International Liaison Unit, which shares information between law enforcement agencies in the two countries. The list itself is reportedly shared and used by Customs and Border Protection, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, Homeland Security Investigations, and agents within the San Diego unit of the FBI. And those on the list are people that officials believed needed to be screened at the US-Mexico border. The list also reportedly had information on these people, including their name, photo, birthday, country of commencement, and what officials believe their ties to the migrant caravan were. They also placed alerts on their passports, and some even were denied entry into Mexico. Some on the list also had an X drawn over their name to allegedly mark that they had been interviewed, arrested, or had their visa or sentry pass taken away. In addition to the personal information listed in this document, the anonymous Homeland Security source said that there was a dossier made for each individual on the list as well. And these dossiers contained even more personal details. In one that NBC San Diego obtained, they saw the kind of car the person drove, their mother's name, their work and travel history. And as far as the question of, well, is this in some ways some sort of normal behavior? Well, the anonymous source claimed that this is not standard, saying, we are a criminal investigation agency. We're not an intelligence agency. We can't create dossiers on people, and they're creating dossiers. This is an abuse of the Border Search Authority. But the CBP released a statement saying, it is protocol following these incidents to collect evidence that might be needed for future legal actions and to determine if the event was orchestrated. CBP and our law enforcement partners evaluate these incidents, follow all leads garnered from information collected, conduct interviews and investigations in preparation for and often to prevent future incidents that could cause further harm to the public, our agents, and our economy. And they also later told NBC News that everyone on that list was allegedly nearby violence that took place at the border in November, and saying that they created this list so they could question them about the violence and learn what started it. But on that note, you had one photojournalist on the list, Ariana Dressler, who said that the agents asked her about her job, the caravan, if people were talking about the process of seeking asylum in the US, and if she rented or owned her home. They also reportedly told her that anytime she needed to cross the border, she would go through secondary screenings, a process that could take an hour. Another freelance journalist by the name of Keitra Kahana explained that on her way from Canada to Mexico via a layover in Detroit, her passport was flagged. Reportedly, she was taken into secondary screenings in Montreal, where agents asked her about the nature of her job. And when she got to Mexico, her phone was taken from her and she was escorted to a back room by officials. And in fact, she told NBC in San Diego, quote, I wasn't allowed to be in communication with anyone. I wasn't allowed to contact my embassy. And after 13 hours, she was ultimately denied entry into the country. Now, journalists being questioned at the border is nothing new, but this document does validate what many have been reporting for a long time. Back in October, the Committee to Protect Journalists made a report on journalists being screened at the border, and they found that 37 journalists they spoke to went through secondary screenings at the border, which they called invasive. And on top of that, 20 had to hand over electronic devices for border agents to search, with one journalist even saying that they would not be allowed to cross the border without handing devices over.
The person then asked me, well, we just need to search your phone now. I told him, I'm not allowed to let you see my phones because in my phones there's contacts, there's sources. And he said, well, you need to make a choice because if you want to come into this country, we need to search your phones.
And the number of electronic devices searched the border is increasing significantly. In 2016, CBP searched just over 19,000 devices, and in 2017, that number increased by over 10,000, with them searching 30,000 devices. Also with this situation, the ACLU has responded to the document and the way journalists are being treated at the border by saying, quote, this is an outrageous violation of the First Amendment. The government cannot use the pretext of the border to target activists critical of its policies, lawyers providing legal representation, or journalists simply doing their jobs. We are exploring all options in response. But with all of that said, of course, I want to pass the question off to you. Do you look at the situation and you think that's completely fine? Or do you see this as government organizations overstepping, that this is an invasion of privacy, or maybe even an intimidation tactic? Any and all thoughts on this, I'd love to hear from you. And that's where we're going to end today's show. And remember, if you like this video, let me know. Hit that like button. Also, if you're new here, be sure to subscribe, ring the bell to turn on notifications. Also, I always recommend people follow me on Twitter, at PhillyD. I feel like every day people are messaging me saying that for some reason YouTube unsubscribed them, they're not getting their notifications. So Twitter notifications, that's a safe bet. But with that said, if you did miss yesterday's Philip DeFranco show or this morning's Extra Morning News Deep Dive, you want to catch up, you can click or tap right there to watch that. But with that said, of course, as always, my name's Philip DeFranco. You've just been filled in. I love yo faces, and I'll see you tomorrow.